passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the Long and Winding Royal Road, our look back at the 1990s era of All Japan Pro Wrestling here at postwrestling.com. My name is W.H. Park, and I hope everyone is doing well. Today's special guest is an independent wrestler from Canada and someone I met last year at some of the major independent shows going on in Toronto back during the SummerSlam weekend. And he's made quite a name for himself over the last couple of years as one of the best technical wrestlers in the world. He is, of course, Daniel Makabe. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me back after we got to do an episode of the Liger Show. And All Japan in the 90s is something that's near and dear to my heart. So when you told me about this, I was very stoked to be involved in it. So
yeah, I was really happy when I said that, you know, if we record again, this is my idea for the show, is looking at the Four Pillars era of All Japan. And you were like, oh, I love that era. So I'm like, excellent. So we can talk about it. So before we get into that, though, like I did mention that, you know, you are an independent wrestler. And obviously during, you know, the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic hitting, a lot of independent wrestling kind of just went on hiatus. And I assume you are on hiatus from wrestling as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, things seem to be starting up in certain pockets of the United States, but nothing has kind of started back up, or not a ton really here in British Columbia where I'm at. And the U.S.-Canada border is currently closed. So, you know, a lot of my bookings previously have been in like Seattle or Portland or other parts of the Northwest, and I can't currently drive there. So so that's kind of dried things up a little bit. I was actually in Europe when everything just kind of ceased to exist and all the various restrictions and travel restrictions went into place. And I had one booking over there canceled, and there was some concern, mostly from my family members, that I was going to be able to get back to Canada. All right. But that there was no issue with that. I was quite confident that'd be fine. And then I ended up having, I believe, 12 or 13 bookings that I had in place. Some pretty big ones, too, that got canceled because of all of this. And nothing on the horizon for the time being, unfortunately. But it is what it is. So
now, if, you know, say in the next couple of months, like a lot of promotions start running back up again, in particularly in your area, what kind of criteria do they have to meet for you? Like for you to meet, like, you know, like your safety concerns to be able for you to accept a booking to go wrestle again?
I don't know. I'm a little on the fence. I'm very torn because like British Columbia, where I'm at, is has done really good. I actually saw a chart somewhere that kind of put together all the various like countries and regions with populations of over 5 million in the world. And BC, which the population of British Columbia is just over 5 million, had the best numbers, period, in the world. So things are apparently pretty decent here. That being said, I think for the time being, there will have to be those kind of restrictions where there could be no more than, 50 or maybe 100 people in the audience. And I don't know, I obviously miss wrestling. It's tomorrow as of record time will be 4 months since my last match, which is the longest stretch that I've gone in years and years and years. I don't know. I don't really want the halfway version of it. I'd kind of rather wait until things seem to be, more in line where we need to be to run shows as they used to be. And that might not be for quite some time. I did have someone reach out to me about a booking in the United States. And while I'm not able to drive across the border, I can fly across the border technically. It's just when I would fly home, I would have to, by Canadian law, have to quarantine for 2 weeks before I'm able to return to work or whatever. And I initially thought that would be feasible. And it turns out that wasn't really going to be the case. And also, I just had a little bit of a voice in the back of my head, seeing what's going on in the news and seeing kind of the state of the virus, particularly in certain parts of the United States. And I think I'm okay to just sit things out for the time being, if I'm being honest. So,
no, I think that's probably the best, way to go about doing this. If you're an independent wrestler, but it's not your main source of income, you don't have to worry about paying your rent or putting food on the table based on taking wrestling bookings, that if you don't need to do it, if you're doing it more out of a passion for wrestling, then I think the way you're thinking about it is wait till it's fully back, it's fully safe, and then go back to wrestling. I think it's quite admirable. So my hats off to you on that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I miss it. And I might find ways to get back into a ring and a training kind of element, because there is a school here that has recently reopened because the way that the restrictions in British Columbia work, it's allowed to. I'll be able to kind of scratch that itch. But I'd rather be safe than sorry. I have some family members that I'm rather close to that are older, that I don't want to jeopardize them or my health or anyone else in my life. So yeah, let's. But I don't fault anyone else who, obviously is dying to get back in the ring, especially if it's someone who's making a living off of it. So
definitely. Okay. Well, let's pivot towards our topic today, and that's All Japan Pro Wrestling of the 1990s. As you said earlier, it's a time period, an era of wrestling that's near and dear to your heart. So Daniel, how did you discover All Japan Wrestling of this era?
I think the first time I ever really saw mention of it was, in one of the PWIs, the PWI 500s. I remember seeing Kobashi and Misawa getting ranked pretty high. I want to say it was 97. So I think that was the year they traded the Triple Crown back and forth. And that kind of piqued my interest as someone who was starting to kind of branch out a little bit more outside of what I was watching on television, and start to get a little more into tape trading. And then what really kind of set me off was a couple websites. There was a review website called Quebrada that was written by a guy named Mike Lorfice. I don't know if you remember that. But he would review lots of All Japan and All Japan Women and other Japanese promotions at the time. And then the website that really kind of set off my fandom was a message board / kind of review site called the Death Valley Driver Video Review. And, they would talk lots about the various matches in All Japan. They did a poll in kind of the mid 2000, early 2001, maybe, ranking the top 20 All Japan Pro Wrestling matches of the 90s, which we will reference that poll a little later on, I imagine. And that's what really kind of set me off in that, okay, I need to seek out these wrestlers and these matches that I'm reading all these words about. And I sought, to do so via tape trading and buying things from wherever I could get them. Cause this is pre-streaming, pre-GIFing, pre all that good stuff. So.
Well, definitely, I heard about Cape Rada. I never really went to that site or read the reviews there, but definitely, I was a very active member of the DVDR message board. I'm not going to tell you what my username was. That's
I will never tell anyone what my username on. It was incredibly bad. Although I was a teenager, and it was pretty embarrassing. The one funny thing was the first time that I guested on Between the Sheets, which is a podcast by Chris Zellner and David Bixenspan, who were both regulars on the DVDVR. Neither of them kind of knew who I was back then. Like, they didn't put the connection two and two that, you know, Daniel Makabe was this person who they had encountered, you know, 20 years prior. And as soon as Chris Zellner saw my real name on a Skype call, he immediately, you know, put two and two together. He remembered my username from 20 years ago, and embarrassingly, he brought it back up for that discussion. So, but yeah, no, I don't fault you at all for keeping that under wraps.
I think probably outside of like the founders of the DVDR, probably the only person who had any courage to, you know, continue using his username is Alan Farrell over at the Torch.
Yes. Yes.
Good friend of mine. But that's where I first met him. But what is it about 1990s era All Japan that appeals to you, Daniel?
It's funny because what appealed to me then and what appeals to me now, I don't know if they're necessarily the same thing. So then I think I was definitely caught up in seeing all these like cool new moves that I had never seen before. And, you know, a lot of them very like really dangerous looking ones, which is definitely kind of a trope that definitely got ramped up in the later kind of 90s to early 2000s of that era of All Japan and kind of carried over into NOAH. But, you know, now kind of looking upon it with adult eyes, like, I just like how everything is treated so seriously and how everything has purpose, and the selling for my money, especially early in the 90s, is second to none. And they just have, you know, maybe the best roster of full-time like heavyweight wrestlers like ever assembled, for in my opinion. So,
and of those heavyweights in this amazing roster, who would you say is your favorite wrestler of this era?
Now it's probably Jumbo Tsuruta, even though we only kind of get like the tail end of his career for the first couple years of this decade. But at the time that I was getting into All Japan Pro Wrestling, it was 100% Mitsuharu Misawa. He was my favorite wrestler at the time that my like fandom was really ramping up on DVDVR. I actually posted this on my social media about a year ago, and I'll send you this afterwards. But I was at my cleaning out like a closet at my parents' house, and I found an old project that I did. I took Japanese in high school. One year I took French and Japanese, which boggling. I didn't get the two confused, but and one of the projects we had to do for introductory Japanese was kind of like a presentation on like a celebrity, and everyone else in my class was doing various like, you know, Japanese actors and singers and like, you know, pop stars, and I did my project on Mitsuharu Misawa, and I actually found it in the closet. I still have it here today, so I'll send you a picture afterwards. But Misawa for sure was the guy for me.
Yeah, for me, I was always like kind of fluctuating between like Kawada and Kobashi, and I like them for different reasons. And oddly enough, people ask me who's your favorite wrestler of all time. Like Kobashi is probably going to hit the number one spot, but if you ask me who my favorite four pillar was, I'm going to say Kawada is my favorite of those four, because I think his story is a lot more compelling to me than Kobashi's, just because like his eternal struggle to supplant Misawa in this era is really like just creates compelling storylines and therefore compelling matches. And I love Kobashi to death. I really, really do. But there's just something about Kawada in this context, that just makes him, puts him just a step above Kobashi as one of the four pillars.
I think Kawada's really, he's, I don't think he's underrated or necessarily or overlooked. He, a lot of his, like his nuance and his kind of his strengths are just kind of subdued. Like he's definitely not as flashy as Kobashi or Misawa. But in some ways, like I think he might be the best seller. And that's crazy to say because all three of them are all great at selling in their own kind of way. But I think Kawada's is very nuanced and great. And when it comes to just who's the best straight up ass kicker, it's Kawada in a landslide, I think. So,
well, we'll talk about selling with Kawada. Like I always thought when I was getting into Japanese wrestling in general, like in the late 90s, I always thought, you know, who the two best sellers were, especially with like their facial expressions were Toshiaki Kawada and Shinjiro Otani is like, and I was always like fluctuating between those two. Who's the better seller? Oh, this week I just saw this match with Otani, so now it's him. Then I'd see a match with Kawada. It's like, no, it's Kawada. So definitely he has a very nuanced, but he definitely also has like these very obvious and really great like facial expressions, especially when he gets like punched in the face.
Yeah, no, he's the best. He's the best when it comes to that sort of stuff. He's really good at like delayed little bits where he kind of like tries to shake it off and then it's like, oh no, that got me. Like, and then he slowly goes down and kind of you know, weeps he's awesome when it comes to that sort of stuff for sure.
All right, well let's talk about today's match. You picked this match and it's kind of a hidden gem because like you won't be able to find this too easily on the various like, you know, sites like YouTube or Dailymotion. We will have a link for this. I might host this myself. We'll see. We're gonna upload this. It's gonna drop in about a month's time from when we're recording this. But I will have somehow for people to be able to watch this match. Don't worry if you're listening to this and go, oh my god, I can't find this match. We'll have a link in the description. But we're gonna talk about Jumbo Tsuruta and Akira Taue, collectively known as Tsuruta Gun, and they're taking on the team of Kenta Kobashi and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, members of the Super Generation Army. This comes from the New Year Giant Series Day 18 show from Korakuen Hall on January 26, 1992. And Daniel, why did you? What was it about this match, and how did you find this match?
So there's a few things. I don't fault anyone who chooses one of like the big epic all timers, like, you know, the June 9th, 95 tag match, or the December 6th, 96, or June 3rd, 94, or, you know, January 20th, 97, any of these like kind of all timer 90s All Japan matches. But because those are epics and they're amazing and they deserve to be discussed. But I just wanted to go with something a little off the beaten path, something that not everyone has seen necessarily. And so it kind of flashes back to that Death Valley Driver Best of the 90s list. It was like a poll voted upon by people on that message board at the time. And I don't know where like love for this match came from or where people saw it, but somehow this match finished, I believe, number like 17 or 18 out of the 20 among all those other epic, you know, I just listed like four or five dates off, right? There's so many more that I'm, you know, completely forgetting about, including one involving this team that we're going to discuss, you know, Kobashi and Kikuchi. They have an all-timer a couple months after this, but this one just kind of stood out to me as like, okay, this is weird. I've never heard of this match. And I think I first saw it, you know, maybe a couple years after the poll came out, when I was trying to be a completist and see everything on the poll. And it was when I finally saw it, it was like, oh, okay, I get it now. This match, you know, there's like very little discussion about it online, but I think it's a real hidden gem. And I wanted to discuss something just a little bit different and hopefully shine some light on what is a bit of a forgotten match. So,
and so this match is a continuation of the red hot Super Generation Army versus the Tsuruta Gun feud that is happening in All Japan at this time. And just for background, people who don't know like what these terms mean, so the Super Generation Army is kind of like the younger guys in All Japan at the time, primarily four wrestlers: Mitsuharu Misawa, Toshiaki Kawada, Kenta Kobashi, and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi. And I'm kind of listing them in their pecking order. So Misawa's number one, Kawada's number two, Kobashi's number three, and Kikuchi is the number four guy on the team. You would say that Kobashi and Kikuchi are kind of the B team of the unit. Like, so Misawa and Kawada, when they team, they're like the top guys, the top team in the unit. And on the other side, we have Suruda Gun. So at this time, Suruda Gun is primarily, of course, Jumbo Suruda, who the faction is named after. His number two is Akira Taue, who used to be aligned with the Super Generation Army, but he kind of turned on them to join Jumbo Suruda, and probably for the best. He was going to be slotted as the number four guy if he stayed with the Super Generation Army, and Kikuchi would have been number five. But he thought, if I join Jumbo and I get mentored by the ace of this company, I'm going to be the number two guy in the unit, and I'm going to be in all the main events. And very smart on Taue's part there. Number three in the team would be Masanobu Fuchi. And their number four would be one of the younger wrestlers who is still wrestling to this day, and that's Yoshinari Ogawa. I don't think we see him outside the ring for this match, but he's definitely part of the unit. He's usually the pin eater in most of their matches, like that these guys have in their multi-man tag matches, Daniel.
Yeah, that's one thing that they do really well, you know, within the context of the promotion in general, which kind of translates over to the matches themselves, which is very indicative in this match. But there is a pecking order, and they use that to tell stories. You know, that becomes like an element within their storytelling within their matches or their series of matches. And I don't think Ogawa's out there for this match, but Fuchi 100% is. And I just have to throw it out there, 'cause I think Fuchi is one of the most underrated workers of all time. And he's someone who doesn't get enough love shine on him. And he was wrestling fairly regular, not regularly, but he was wrestling before the pandemic, I think. Was he not still going like a couple matches a year, or?
Mainly in Korakuen Hall. All Japan had Korakuen Hall shows. He would do like the comedy stuff in the opening tag matches and things like that, which is kind of funny because, like, if you watch Fuchi in this era, he is a vicious bastard.
He's like the anti-comedy guy, but like I love like when the Noah Exodus happens and the only two natives who stay are Kawada and Fuchi. Fuchi got like a little bit of a push, even though he was kind of past his prime, but everyone at that point could still see that he could go. That's off topic, but still. Masanobu Fuchi is an amazing worker who I definitely have lifted things from in my own work. So
you're talking about the various stories that exist within the overall feud of Super Generation Army and Suruda Gun. And so the main story of this is, like, obviously Misawa versus Jumbo is the main story of the feud because they're vying for the ace position. So Jumbo is the ace and Misawa wants to become the ace. Baba's picked him to be the ace of the company. And so that's the main, you know, the main crux of the story behind a lot of these matches. Kawada versus Taue is the other story. And like, anytime these two interact at this time, which is kind of ironic to say because like they become one of the best tag teams after Jumbo leaves and Kawada joins up with Taue, but these guys hate each other and a lot of their interaction is just so violent and brutal. It's quite amazing. And then kind of the understory is that Kobashi and Kikuchi are the guys trying to prove their worth against, you know, Jumbo and Taue and Masanobu Fuchi and Yoshinari Ogawa, and especially Kobashi because like he's number three. But you know this guy's just got the fire. And obviously, you know, later on in the decade, he's going to become one of the top guys in the company. Like, it's like him and Kawada are training number two spots, I feel. But, the main story in this particular match, though, Daniel, is like Kobashi and Kikuchi, they're the B team, and they're going to take on the A team, and they got to, like, hold their own. They got to try to, you know, not – I don't think that the goal is to win the match. I think the goal is to, like – get in there and show like that they're worthy to be in the ring with Jumbo Suruda.
Yeah, they got to prove their worth, right? They got to show that they can hang with the big boys, specifically with Jumbo, and that the fact that they're not going to back down to them. Like I think, you know, Kobashi feels maybe he's a step below Taue on the pecking order, but they feel kind of equals. And I think Taue debut kind of around the same kind of time frame as Kobashi. I know he's a little bit older, but that's because he had like a sumo career beforehand, right? But
I think so. Yeah, I think they debut around the same time. Misawa and Kawada are debut earlier, and then yes, later on, like it's Kobashi and Taue. I do think Taue came from a different company. I think Japan Pro Wrestling. And then he joined All Japan. Baba recruited him for All Japan when he was still a rookie, though.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, you know, like they hold their own, you know, quite well against Taue, but you know, the unit, the established unit of Taue and Tsuruta, like that's a whole other story that they really have to prove that they can hang in there. And they come at it with a good game plan and a goal. So, you know, certainly. So,
well, let's talk a bit about this team. Let's talk about both teams actually, but let's talk first about Tsuruta Gun. So, you know, Jumbo in his career, he was part of like some really great tag teams. He had, you know, obviously the start of his career, he was teaming with his mentor, Giant Baba, a lot. And then he would go to form kind of the all-star, all-Japan team of himself and Jinrichō Tenryu when they were like taking on the invading forces of Riki Choshu and Yoshiaki Yatsu and the Choshu army coming to all-Japan, jumping in from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And then later on, Yoshiaki Yatsu would form a tag team with Jumbo Tsuruta called the Olympics, which is an awesome tag team.
They have the best jackets when they're the Olympics. I love those jackets they wear. But anyways,
I was going to mention Jumbo's ring jacket in today's match, but then you know Yoshiaki Yatsu leaves to join SWS along with Tenryu and Asahara Hara and other people, and so Jumbo needs a new partner, so he picks Taue. And I don't know, like I love the Olympics and I love his team with Tenryu. But my God, like I love the dynamic of like what we call the senpai, the senior, and the kohai, the junior. So mentor and apprentice, you know, that's kind of like that's the relationship these two have. And I love the dynamic of those kinds of tag teams in general. But I think it works so well in this particular pairing.
Yeah, no, it does, because like Taue is almost kind of like a junior Tsuruta. You know, he's kind of a Tsuruta in training. Like he didn't necessarily reach Tsuruta's highs as a worker, although Taue himself is a very underrated worker, like very, very underrated worker. But it just feels like a natural fit, these two together. Whereas like Tenryu and Tsuruta are very much feel like equals. And yeah, like you said, the kind of the junior and the mentor, that's kind of a classic pairing in Japanese wrestling. You know, you get a lot of those kind of tag teams that get put together and end up being, you know, working really well, you know, well, especially in All Japan, you know, later on in the 90s too. There's other various pairings that, you know, that can be referenced, I'm sure, during throughout the course of this show. So.
Definitely. So let's talk also about Kobashi and Kikuchi. And you referenced that a couple of months after this match, they're going to be involved in a classic. And that classic is against the Can-Am Express, the team of Doug Furness and Dan Crawford. And it's for the All-Asia Tag Team titles. And I'm sure someone's going to pick this match, even if I have to pick it myself and maybe bring you back onto the show. Maybe we'll talk about that match in the future. Maybe we'll talk about a different match. But this match is going to definitely get talked about. And like one thing like, it's important to remember, like, Kobashi would have these, like, epic teams with Misawa later on, and where they're the World Tag Team Champions. He would also team later on in the later stages of the decade with Jun Akiyama as Burning, which is my favorite, like, pairing of Kobashi and another wrestler is Akiyama and Kobashi. But my God, Kobashi and Kikuchi, like, and they displayed in this match, and we're going to talk about it, is they just have this undeniable chemistry, like with their double team combinations and the way they tag in and out and the way they kind of look out for each other in this match as well. And they just seem so in sync that, like, if you're not familiar with this tag team, just don't just go on like the Can-Am match. Like, this is another great example of like these guys work so well together, and like they would have been like they would have fit in like in any other company of the era that had a strong tag team scene.
Yeah, I noticed you conveniently left out the infamous Kobashi Johnny Ace team, but no, you're quite right. I think Kobashi and Kikuchi have like almost like a brother kind of vibe to it, like a big brother little brother sort of pairing. It just feels to me like, you know, Kikuchi is obviously, you know, undersized for the All Japan heavyweight scene. You know, and he would have his share of like junior matches, you know, against Fuchi and other kind of junior heavyweights. They have a junior heavyweight division, but a lot of it is very much integrated into the main kind of division. Right. But, But it always just feels like to me that Kobashi is always looking out for Kikuchi, and they do have those like cool kind of tandem moves. A lot of them involve Kobashi like hurling Kikuchi at their opponents to in a very effective manner though. Right. So
yeah, it's kind of like his wrecking ball or he's Thor. Kobashi is Thor and Kikuchi is Thor's hammer Mjolnir. So that's maybe how we can look at that relationship. So getting to the match right off the start of this match, as soon as the bell rings, Kobashi and Kikuchi jump Surutagun. As you know, right away, Kikuchi hits Taue with a dropkick, sending him to the outside. Kobashi just runs into the corner and hits Jumbo with a forearm, knocking him off the apron. And right off the bat, Daniel, this match is on.
Yeah, hot start. And like I said, like they come at it with a smart strategy. You can sort of see, you know, referee, underrated part of what made All Japan in the 90s as special as it was. Kyohei Wada is the ref here, and he's kind of saying, okay, like, you know, let's get one guy back to each corner. Okay, Tsuruta, you're going back to your corner. Okay, Kobashi, Kikuchi, who's it going to be? And they're kind of doing the kind of schoolyard, like, okay, guys, we, you know, like they've got the plan and they're going to time it just right. You know, the game of, schoolyard ball or whatever. Right. And as soon as the bell goes, they both, make the big attack, you know, Kikuchi drop kicks Taue and Kobashi knocks Tsuruta off the apron. And they know that their plan of attack is they have to isolate the lesser man on the team, Taue, and try and get an advantage that way. So.
And this includes, like you're saying, like, you know, Kobashi picks up Kikuchi and throws him over the top rope right onto Taue, who's on the floor at Korakuen Hall, which I was like, oh, geez, this is like, they're not messing about early in this match. And most of the kind of like the first, I guess, 6-7 minutes of this match is, you know, Kobashi and Kikuchi double teaming Taue, including this one really cool move where Kobashi kind of backflips Kikuchi onto a prone Taue who's on the mat. And I thought that's an example of one of these like great double team moves that these two come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Like their first kind of 6-7 minutes, like the shine, as it were, is a lot of quick tags in and out. The one thing that I love that is just like a really subtle thing that they do is they spend the better part of the early stages of the match trying to work over Taue and specifically his back and specifically for Kobashi to try and turn him over into a Boston Crab. And, Kobashi tries to turn him over for a full Boston Crab. He can't get it. He has to, settle for something else. Kikuchi tries to turn him over for a full Boston. He can only get the half, but only kind of partially turns him over. And every time that they're trying to, you know, get a submission kind of locked on to its fullest, there's, you know, cranky old Jumbo Tsuruta to put his nose in there and make sure that, you know, if it appears to him like, okay, they might actually have something here, he's in there to break it up and to punch one of them, you know, square in the face and kind of show them, hey, don't forget who's boss here, who's running things here.
Well, as you're saying, so yeah, Jumbo at some point, like during, like, you know, all the heat that Taue is taking from Kobashi and Kikuchi, he just thinks to himself, okay, I'm tired of these guys beating the shit out of my boy here. He comes in, and as Kobashi is attempting to put the Boston Crab on, he just goes in and just starts punching Kobashi in the head and then kicks him in the face for good measure as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. But the one thing is, like I said, neither guy is afraid to stand up to Jumbo. You know, there's a couple moments where, you know, I think he kicks Kobashi off and then he goes back to his corner and Kobashi's right there in his face and he gives him a forearm or a big slap. And that's one thing is, you know, Jumbo knew when to sell for these guys, right? Like Jumbo's obviously, you know, the legend and the strongman on his team and in this match, but he knew when to make these guys look good and when it was appropriate, to go flying off the apron he sells like a little slap from Kikuchi, like, and makes it, you know, seem so meaningful, you know?
Well, Taue himself has had enough of this shit and starts lobbying forearms, overhead chops, and knee lifts to Kikuchi. But, you know, Kikuchi is able to drag him back to his corner to a winning Kobashi. Kobashi tags in and puts Taue in the Canadian backbreaker. But Jumbo comes in, to punch Kobashi in the face again, which is kind of a recurring theme if you watch a lot of these tag matches between Super Generation Army and Sarutagun. Like, Kobashi is either getting punched in the face or the nose, or they're like working over one of his knees.
Yeah, and unfortunately those knees ended up being his downfall. But yeah, no, that's kind of a thing in All Japan, and the way they structure their tags is you kind of, if you're there on the apron and you see your guy getting worked over, you want to give him the opportunity to kind of work his way out of a hole. But if it appears it's going to go his way, then you need to step in and you got to punch Kendo Kobashi in the face. That's just the way it works.
That's how it works, especially if you're Jumbo Tsuruta. From this point, Kikuchi tries for several different submission moves in the early part of the match, including a Kimura lock, a stretch muffler, and a single leg crab. Jumbo comes in and punches Kikuchi in the face. I just like when Jumbo punches any of these dudes in the face while they're putting on submission moves. And it's during the, like, when he has like the single leg crab on Taui, but you know, Kikuchi gets this punch, but he ain't taking any of Jumbo's shit. He goes over to Jumbo and elbows him right in the face, knocking Jumbo off the apron. So going to a point you just made a couple of, you know, a minute or so earlier, is like, Kikuchi and Kobashi are just like, listen, and they've been feuding with Jumbo for a while now, but they're not intimidated by him. They know that, you know, like, they can go up to him and just, like, you know, hit him really hard, and they're not going to get in trouble backstage or anything like that. But in the context of the story that we're seeing on screen in the ring, it just puts these guys over so much, especially Kobashi.
Yeah, no, I mean, Kobashi definitely stands up, you know, to Tsuruta. But as you said, you know, Kikuchi does it here too. Although, you know, one thing that kind of becomes a narrative in the match in a couple places is, you know, these two guys are working really well together. They're doing their double teams. They're, you know, trying to isolate Taue. And, you know, they get distracted by Jumbo, obviously, and they, you know, they feel like, okay, we need to stand up to him. We need to prove our worth. And sometimes you need to pick your spots, and you need to, you know, stay focused on the task at hand, which is Taue, because Kikuchi here, you know, suffers a fate coming up when he turns his attention to Jumbo, and it's it gets pretty brutal in there.
Well, a point to make is that all these interference spots from Jumbo elicit strong boos from the fans. So you have to keep in mind that, you know, Jumbo's been the ace of this company for the last, oh, I don't know, 15, 20 years. But, like, the fans are more excited about the prospect of, like, Misawa, Kawada, Kobashi becoming, like, the new main eventers of this company, like, the fresh faces. And Jumbo is holding dearly onto his spot in the company as the ace of the company. And so he's kind of becomes, you know, from the hero, he becomes the de facto, the heel, the villain of these interactions. And the only time usually where, like, Jumbo and Taue as a team get cheered is when they're facing, like, for example, like a team like the Miracle Violence Connection. Like, you know, that's when the dynamic changes, when they're fighting, like, the Gaijin wrestlers, not against, like, Super Generation Army. But either way, like, it's an awesome tag team, and like, you know, but it's really interesting to see Jumbo get booed. You know, I can't imagine, like, say in New Japan, like, Yuji Nagata getting booed. You know what I mean?
No, but I think Jumbo really, he knew his role at that point, and he really ran with it, you know. And that's something, like, yeah, there, All Japan was built on a lot of tradition and people, you know, had long careers there. But when people reached a certain point in their career, they knew when to, you know, either de-emphasize them, put them lower on the card, put them in the comedy matches. Even Giant Baba did that. And Jumbo would have done that too, had he not, you know, had his issues with, I think it was hepatitis, right? But, you know, at this point, you know, Jumbo's, you know, got to be in his 40s, and he's not there to be like the star babyface. He's there to be, you know, the old man who they can play off of, and we can have these, you know, these bright new upcoming stars, which, you know, like, any one of them would be like a once in a lifetime, you know, talent. The fact that, you know, All Japan had all these guys at the same time, all on the uprise is crazy. But you know, Jumbo knew how to play off of them and play his role and help them grow and help foster that roster to become what they would become later on in the decade.
From here, Tawe drops Kikuchi throat first onto the top rope. And this is when Jumbo sort of finally tags into this match. From here, Jumbo immediately shoots Kikuchi into the ropes and then kicks the young man square in the face. I love this shit. Jumbo sends Kikuchi to the outside where Tawe picks him up for what looks like it's going to be a body slam on the floor. But instead, you know, Tawe drops him chin first into the blue guardrails. And this gets some really shrill screams and boos from the fans.
There, I was going to say, that was one thing I was going to bring up. There wasn't like an audible gasp because the crowd kind of, you can hear their attention levels kind of rising as he picks him up for the body slam. They kind of, oh, and then he drops him on the guardrail and they just like, oh, like they all, you know, they recoil in terror because that probably didn't feel good. And that becomes kind of a recurring theme, not only in this match, but in Kikuchi's career, that he kind of becomes everyone's punching bag and he takes some brutal punishment in this match.
Yeah, including Jumbo repeatedly ramming Kikuchi's head into the top turnbuckle, which gets the fans chanting Kikuchi's name, which is just amazing to hear. Like this Korakuen crowd, which is, you know, traditionally a very, very, very vocal crowd, and I've been fortunate enough to be in that crowd many times. But in this point, you know, like they're really rallying behind Super Generation Army, and especially Kikuchi, because just the sheer amount of brutality he is absorbing from Jumbo Tsuruta is really, you can't feel anything but sympathetic towards him, like as you were saying before, Daniel. From here, Tawe tags in and hits Kikuchi with his sumo stance clothesline. I don't think that's the official name of it, but that's what I call it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the move is called. And is it one that, like, did he continue to do that as the decade went on, or did he kind of leave that one by the wayside? I'm trying to think.
I think he kind of de-emphasizes his sumo background for the most part, but I think he busts out once in a while. If he's able to set it up properly, like without it looking hokey or anything like that, he'll do it. But, you know, he's doing a lot of the sumo, you know, like sumo positioning in his matches, like in the early 90s, like later on. Yeah, I can't really recall. I'm sure it'll come up like in the matches I review with him later on as the show progresses. From here, Tawe then puts Kikuchi, and I love this spot, he puts Kikuchi into a giant swing, but as he's swinging him round and round, he's also swinging Kikuchi up and down until he finally crashes Kikuchi into the ropes. And I'm just thinking, man, Kikuchi bounces off of those things and it looks brutal. But I was also thinking, man, this is awesome.
Yeah, no, it's like one of the more violent giant swings I've ever seen. And it's a nice little nod because Kobashi earlier on, like I said, they're trying to get that Boston Crab on Tawe. And at one point, Kobashi almost tries to giant swing Tawe just to turn him over. And he has not the best attempt. And Tawe's a big boy to be trying that on. And it almost felt to me like, you know, Tawe like getting a little bit of, hey, you want to try to do this to me? Well, I'm going to do this to your younger brother here. And I'm going to do it in a much more violent manner. And there's nothing you can do about it. So,
and the brutality doesn't stop there because Jumbo tags in and hits Kikuchi with the most vicious atomic drop I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I thought Kikuchi's spine was broken from the force of this atomic drop that Jumbo like inflicts on poor Kikuchi here.
Jumbo's got to have a good, like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 inches on Kikuchi. And I don't think I've ever seen someone use his height, like the height discrepancy as effectively as Jumbo does here, because like you said, he picks him up with this atomic drop, but he picks him up all the way up onto his shoulders and he holds him up there and kind of marches him around the ring and then brings him down hard across his knee. Like an atomic drop is something that's kind of like, that feels like kind of an antiquated move, especially with 2020 eyes. But like this was not, this was like, this was violence. This was fitting. And this was, it was brutal. Like I've never seen anyone do it like that since. So
listen, if you use the way Jumbo did this atomic drop, you use this in 2020 match, I would believe it's the finish. Seriously, that's how violent this move looked.
I mean, Bob Backlund used it as a finish, so.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, not the modern era, back in the 70s, yes. But
I know.
But Jumbo, if you, like, you'd have to be a tall wrestler and, like, someone with, like, you know, some you know, heft to their body, I suppose, like, to be able to, like, make this believable. But just the way he just drives Kikuchi's ass into his knee, my God, I was, like, wincing watching that. And you know, like, I know this is a work, but it's also All Japan, so, like, probably, like, 99% of this actually really does hurt. From here, Kikuchi rallies back and hits Jumbo with forearms and then a leg lariat. But, you know, Jumbo comes back with these vicious knee lifts to the face of Kikuchi. And again, like you were referencing earlier, Daniel, like, Kikuchi just is the whipping boy of this match.
Yeah, like, he gets that little bit of a fire up, a little bit of a hope spot, hits that leg lariat, and it almost just serves more to anger Jumbo and be like, oh, you're going to fight back? Well, I'm going to give it to you twice as hard now. And yeah, he just continues to pummel him.
And like you were talking about also before, it's like Jumbo selling in this match is just amazing. Like, it serves kind of twofold. Like, one, it's putting over the younger wrestler's offense, like Kobashi Kikuchi in this instance, but it's also like showing why he hates these guys so much, because they're so disrespectful to them, and they can't hurt him. Their offense does hurt him, and so, like, it angers him. Like, these guys are nothing to me, like, but they're still, you know, their offense is still, like, having an effect on me, and so, like, it plays into this, his hatred of all four of these guys.
Yeah, absolutely, and yet still at the same time, they do such a good job of protecting him. Like, they, you know, maybe a little preemptive, but they don't really get any of their big false finishes on Jumbo, because, you know, he still is held with such esteem, you know? So there's a time and a place, but, and he's building them up, but it's still not, you know, it's what's the word I'm looking for? It's a little, reined in still.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, you got to save it for Misawa, right? And Kawada.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There still is that pecking order of, you know, this is the junior team of the Super Generation Army, right?
Yeah. Kobashi finally tags in, giving Kikuchi some relief. And he goes after Tawe with his trademark chops and a drop kick. Kobashi is briefly in control of the match until Tawe reverses an attempted suplex onto the mats on the floor, and it's Kobashi who hits the ground instead of Tawe. Jumbo tags in and snapmares. This is great. Jumbo, so Kobashi's on the apron on the outside of the ring. Jumbo snaps him over the top rope back into the ring. He then shoots him into the ropes and follows up with a brutal kitchen sink knee into Kobashi's abdomen. And you gotta just amaze at this is a guy who started, like, really the late 60s, the 70s. He's his prime is really in the 80s. But the way he wrestles, he's one of these guys that adapts so easily into a modern style for his time of the 90s. And his offense is just so brutal. Like the atomic drop, it's brutal. This knee to the abdomen, like what you know, in the video games is called a kitchen sink. It, you know, it's not normally a vicious looking move necessarily, but the way Jumbo does it, it just looks like it could be a finisher.
Yeah, he's a well-seasoned veteran. I believe he's a 20-year vet at this point. I think he debuts in 72, but he knows, you know, when's the time to be really methodical and slow and really just kind of work his opponent around, and when's the time to really ramp up the intensity. And he's someone who's still, you know, in his 40s, you know, in theory past his athletic prime, and can still go at a pretty hard clip, and he can charge down Kobashi and give him a kitchen sink, which is something that Kobashi would end up using, you know, as a trademark spot years later too, right? So
From here, Sarutagun takes turns beating the shit out of Kobashi until he makes a comeback with a lariat on Tawe. And then he applies a modified abdominal stretch where he pushes down on Tawe's head and neck at the same time. And I can't remember if this is one of Jumbo's trademark moves, because he does this move and Jumbo just gets really pissed off in the corner.
It's 100% one of Jumbo's trademark moves. So it's very much throwing it back in Jumbo's face. And there's this very cool dynamic of Jumbo kind of stepping through the ropes, like, am I going to break this up? I'm like, you know, how dare you do this right in front of my face? And he's kind of torn. Is he going to let Tao Wei have to kind of work his way out of it? There's kind of like a sense of honor in that, right? And then eventually when it looks like he's going to step through and finally intervene, Kobashi, you know, releases the hold and moves on to the next bit. But it's 100% throwing it back in Jumbo's face.
From here, Kikuchi enters the ring. He sends Tao into the corner and hits him with a black elbow. And then he just immediately runs towards Jumbo Tsuruta on the apron and forearms him right in the face. And it's just like, now it's on. Now it's like, okay, we're just going to continue. We're going to give the punishment to you, old man. And then, you know, Jumbo's not taking any of this, though. Like, Jumbo picks up Kikuchi for what looks like another atomic drop from hell. But instead, he tosses him into the air. And then Kikuchi just goes splat back first on the mat, which is just brutal looking as well.
Yeah, I mean there's almost like a nice kind of a build throughout this match of Jumbo picking up poor Kikuchi like a sack of potatoes and dropping him down in increasingly brutal, more and more brutal matters. But for my money, like, that All Japan ring in the early 90s does not look very forgiving. And being dropped from that height and just falling straight flat onto your back, that probably did not feel very nice if you're Mr. Kikuchi.
Probably not, no. Kobashi tags in, and he and Tao Wei exchange chops. Kobashi blocks a hip toss and turns it into a beautiful-looking DDT. Kobashi follows up with a face crusher and goes for the cover, but Jumbo comes in and stomps away at Kobashi's head. Jumbo then hits Kobashi with the kitchen sink knee, and while he's close to the other corner, he decides to, you know, pay back Kikuchi, and he kicks Kikuchi right in the head for good measure. And I just made a note of what an asshole Jumbo is.
I mean, definitely, but he's gotta stand his ground. You know, he can't he doesn't want to show weakness to these young upstart kids. You know, so he even it is, you know, it is needling him, it is affecting him. He's got to do his best to play it cool and kind of put them back in their place.
Jumbo continues his assault on Kobashi with his patented jumping knee, a vicious body slam, and a lariat. Jumbo kind of goes for these sequence of moves again, but Kobashi ducks the lariat. He avoids the jumping knee. And, you know, as they say, Daniel, hey, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And he hits a draping clothesline on Jumbo here.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's... that, like, honestly, that's kind of a pillar, you know, mind the pun of wrestling, you know, like learning from our past mistakes and building upon it. And it's just such a classic storytelling element that these guys are just amazing at, you know, not only over the course of a match, but over the course of a series of matches. You know, you'll find things where they're learning new moves and learning counters. And that's something that's just really beautiful about the style and the era of All Japan in the 90s.
Yeah, so from here, Kikuchi tags in and hits a missile dropkick on Jumbo. But Jumbo returns the favor with a big boot to Kikuchi's face. And we're pretty much in the crescendo of the match, Daniel, at this point. And Super Generation is riding a wave of momentum, hitting Tao Wei with various tag moves like a double suplex and a variation of the Midnight Express's rocket launcher move. I can't really describe it too well. But if you see it in the match, you'll know what I'm talking about. Kobashi and Kikuchi, just like as we've been saying throughout this whole review, they have just this excellent chemistry as a team.
Yeah, and this kind of series of near falls they get on Tao Wei really shows their teamwork, because there are times, like you said, where, you know, Kobashi helps Kikuchi with that splash. It's almost like he kind of holds his hands and Kikuchi jumps a full 180 over to the far side of Tao Wei and lands a splash. That's kind of the rocket launcher variation you're speaking of. But there's also times where Kobashi is doing his best to hold back Tao Wei and keep him at bay, so Kikuchi can hit some of his own stuff Kobashi holds back Tsuruta, so Kikuchi can hit some stuff on Tao Wei. So yeah, their teamwork, both in the kind of classic sense of the word of working together and also watching out for each other's back, is really something here.
Yeah, Kikuchi hits a dynamite kid like diving headbutt on Tawai and gets it close too. He also hits this beautiful German suplex with an assist from a Kobashi thrust kick to Tawai's face, and this also gets a two. So we're here hitting the part where like we're getting all these near falls in the match, and the crowd is just going absolutely crazy. And you mentioned before the referee of this match is Kyohei Wada, and in this match he shows why he was my favorite ref for so many years. Like in the last couple of years, because of his age and stuff, he's not as good as he used to be, which is natural. But I think one thing I like about Kyohei Wada is that like his pinfalls, the way he counts pinfalls, is so crisp and dramatic. And he's also able to maintain his authority in the ring, and thus, you know, kind of lends to the credibility not only himself as a referee, as an authority figure, but also the credibility of the match itself. And that's just something I really, really loved about All Japan Wrestling, but in Kyohei Wada in particular.
He's an all-timer who doesn't get a lot of play, especially with, you know, kind of modern Japanese wrestling fans. They don't necessarily know kind of the legend of him, but he's, for my money, maybe one of the best referees ever. I mean, definitely one of the best referees ever, maybe the best for honestly, the amount of high end, amazing matches that he has been a part of. And, you know, the best referees are ones that you kind of don't notice. And at the same time, you do notice they add little subtle elements to the matches. They help sell what the wrestlers are doing in the ring. And at the same time, you know, there's this nice balance of that and then being kind of subdued and falling into the background. So the wrestlers themselves are on the forefront, and Wada is just, he's sublime when it comes to that sort of, that nuance.
Yeah. I mean, I would say he's even better of a ref than, you know, the legendary Joe Higuchi, who, you know, like he's a good ref, but like as age catches up with him, he, like his counts are really slow. Like, and then you have Wada in the same era as he's coming up as a ref. His counting is just like 1, 2, 3. And it's all like, you know, it's consistent. And that's something I like in referees, is they have a consistent, you know, counting of the shoulders to the mat for a three count. And like his near falls, like the way he sells, like almost hitting that, you know, 2.75 count is awesome as well. And just, as you're saying, like referees are, the best referees are the ones that you don't notice until you have to notice them. And that's when they're, you know, kind of like counting the fall or, you know, getting the call for the submission from a wrestler who's about to give up, you know, in a match or something like that. But back to the match, we see Jumbo preventing Kobashi from hitting a moonsault. And he does this by clubbering him in the back of the head with a lariat. So again, like, you know, something that, you know, Kobashi would become used to, not only from Jumbo Tsuruta, but from people like Stan Hansen as well. From here, Tawai flattens Kikuchi with a face crusher and follows up with a variation of his Nodoa Otoshi chokeslam. But this isn't enough to keep Kikuchi down, because this man, he's the babyface fire that exists in Kikuchi in this match is just off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely. And just backing it up a little bit, like you said, you know, we've had Kikuchi hitting these series of big false finishes on Tawai. We had the top rope splash. We had the diving headbutt. We had the big German suplex hold. Okay, now it's time for Big Brother Kobashi to try and hit his moonsault and finally put things away, which, you know, hint, hint, he may have done it in a bigger match coming up shortly. And you know, Tsuruta knows that this moonsault is a finish. It's if he hits it, this is going to be it. And he, you know, he lariats Kobashi off the top rope, and Kobashi doesn't get back into the ring for the rest of the match. You know, he comes to finally, and he has to be subdued. But, you know, it's little things like that, you know, they put over the severity of things. And just the selling of Kobashi on the floor. And this allows, like you said, Tawai to kind of turn things around, hit that face buster, which looked brutal, hit that kind of, it's almost like a precursor to the Nodo Otoshi. It's almost set up like a sleeper, just from like a different kind of angle. And then really turn things around for him and Tsuruta. And really, now it's going to be, up to Kikuchi to survive, basically, because Kobashi's laid out on the floor.
Yeah, so like you're saying, Kobashi is kind of out of the match. Jumbo and Tawai hit the smaller man with a double boots to the face. And then from here, basically, we're getting to the end of the match. Jumbo murders Kikuchi with a brutal lariat, but can't get a three on him. He He then follows up with one of his signature moves, the folding powerbomb. But still, Jumbo can't beat Kikuchi. Kikuchi kicks out. And this crowd is super electric and are going nuts for Kikuchi kicking out of all of Jumbo's big moves. But finally, you know, Jumbo Tsuruta, the ace of the company, hits his high-angle backdrop suplex and finally puts Kikuchi away for the three count. And, you know, Daniel, I gotta say, the best part, not just the move itself, the best part has to be the play-by-play guy hitting the register of his voice labeled shrill and screaming as Jumbo kills poor Kikuchi with this backdrop suplex.
Yeah, if I recall, he literally screams out backdrop, like, as he's got Kikuchi up in the air. Like, he knows what's coming. And yeah, it's amazing. Like I said, they do a really good job of putting over Kikuchi and his resiliency, because, you know, plenty of people before have fallen to that lariat or fallen to that power bomb, and he doesn't. But unfortunately, he does fall to, you know, what may be one of the most brutal backdrop suplexes I've ever seen in my life, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. So the match time for this is 22 minutes, 21 seconds of pure tag team excellence. I got to say, Dan, I love this match. One thing I really liked about it is that, you know, both teams look strong. It wasn't just one team dominating the other. This wasn't like a glorified squash match or anything like that. The Super Generation Army looked strong against the higher-ranked Tsuruta Gun team of Jumbo and Taue. But, you know, like, at no point did, like, Jumbo and Taue look like they were outclassed by these younger guys. Like, it was a very, very even match, which, you know, considering that, you know, like we were saying before, that Kobashi and Kikuchi are the B team of Super Generation Army, it's kind of, like, incredible to think that, you know, Jumbo and Taue, especially Jumbo, were so willing to give these guys so much in this match.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's a very even match. There's long control segments on both ends of the spectrum. One thing that I think, you know, like I said, they play up to kind of the hierarchy really well, in that all of the Super Generation Army's big false finishes at the end are on Taue, and all of Tsuruta Gun's big false finishes on the end are on Kikuchi. So they do a good job of protecting Kobashi here too, because, I mean, they probably knew that he was going to move on to bigger and better things as years would progress. And even though Jumbo is, you know, is starting to show his age and is selling for these guys, you know, he still is the top heel in the company, and so they protect him as well. So yeah, no, the both teams come off looking really good in this match.
And it's something you don't really see, at least in my opinion, too much in Japanese professional wrestling these days, is like where, like, there's a lot of double teaming, like in coordinated, like, tag team moves. Like, a lot of times, like, I feel, especially say in New Japan Pro Wrestling, a lot of the tag team matches are, you know, involve guys who are two singles guys, you know, having a match with, you know, like, there's two separate singles matches happening in one match, is how I feel a lot of, like, tag team matches in Japan are like these days. Not so much for junior matches, but a lot of heavyweight tag team matches. But this doesn't feel like that at all. This actually feels like something I would see in, like, you know, the late 80s WWF, or, you know, the late 80s NWA Jim Crockett Promotions, or, you know, the early 90s, you know, WCW. Like, I feel it's that kind of a match that both teams could do well in either of those divisions. And, you know, like, one thing I want to say before we finish the show is that, like, you know, Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, this guy might be the most underrated worker from this era of All Japan, of his generation, of, you know, the Super Generation Army from the Four Pillars era. And I feel it's a shame, like, Giant Baba never gave as much focus to a junior division during this era, because with guys like Kikuchi and the aforementioned Dan Crawford anchoring a division like that, there was potential for it to being a fun division, if not as high quality as, say, New Japan's junior division. But I think it would have, like, been a nice, you know, complement to a lot of the, like, the heavyweight and multi-man tag matches going on in All Japan during this era.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it certainly wasn't as vast of a talent pool as the New Japan Juniors, and they weren't working that same kind of style necessarily. But All Japan had their own share of very talented junior heavyweights. And, you know, part of the problem, a lot of kind of went awry is I believe it was in 93 or maybe 94, All Japan loses their 1 hour time slot and they get, you know, condensed down to a 30 minute time slot on their television program. And what ends up getting, you know, cut a lot of the time is you basically don't see any of the juniors on the television program. So they didn't really even have a chance to shine with what they were doing. So it's kind of a shame because a lot of these guys, like I said, Kikuchi is really unsung and Fuchi, they were kind of like the top two kind of native juniors in All Japan throughout the 90s. And they were both really good workers and not a lot of people will reference them nowadays.
Yeah, you also had like the Malenko brothers working there during this time as well, and Johnny Smith is kind of starting to come into the company via Dynamite Kid, and there's a lot of potential there for having, you know, something different on the card. And I just like one thing, my criticism of All Japan would be that a lot of the matches, like on the undercard, feel kind of same,
yep.
You know, and it would have been nice to have like a faster paced match. It's like kind of why I like when, you know, when like Hayabusa shows up in All Japan for a short period of time, as I talked about in the previous episode, is that he really adds a different flavor to All Japan. And like I said, like it's too bad that Hayabusa never got to work in All Japan. And I say that as an All Japan fan. It's no offense to, like, you know, the people who enjoyed his work in FMW or anything like that. But back to my closing thoughts on this match. Like, again, I loved it. I gave it a rating of 4.75 stars for my own rating scale. And yeah, and I'm so happy that you picked this match, Daniel.
Yeah, I'm 4.75 is crazy. That's awesome. I mean, I love that match too. It's I'm not really much of a star guy, but like, it holds up, you know, among the best of that era. And it's, you know, it's long, you know, it's in the low 20 minutes. So it's not like it's short, but it's not like it's a huge epic, but they pack a lot in there. There's a lot of there's just a really nice build and it builds in an interesting way, in a way that kind of tag matches don't necessarily, they don't feel that way. Like you mentioned, it just feels like, the kind of teamwork isn't necessarily focused upon as much now as it was then. And I love this match too. It certainly holds up from when I first saw it, you know, close to two decades ago. And I'm really glad that I got to share it with you, and hopefully everyone listening at home will check it out as well.
Yeah, I hope so as well. So let's wrap it up here. And where can people find you if they want to like follow you on social media or anything?
Yeah, check me out at Daniel Makabe, DanielMakabe. That's my handle on Twitter or Instagram. I don't have any dates upcoming, obviously, but I do post daily music recommendations. So if you're in a bit of a funk and you need something new to listen to, check me out. And obviously once I start having bookings again, that will be the best place to find out about them. And, if you've never seen me work, there's plenty of my work on YouTube, on independentwrestling.tv, on WXW Now, which is WXW in Germany's, you know, their streaming service, which I've been lucky to be a part of a lot of big shows for that promotion over the course of the last year. And thank you once again, WH, for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. And anytime I get to talk wrestling with you, it's a blast. So
it is for me as well. And I definitely want to have you back on the long and winding Royal Road in the future, as long as this show lasts. You know, Daniel, I keep saying this, like this show can last an entire decade in of itself since it's a monthly show.
Yeah, it's a monthly show, and there's so much good, you know, there's obviously the obvious ones, you know, the matches we've talked about. Yeah, like that Kikuchi Kobashi match from May of 92 is such a classic. I'm sure you'll discuss it at some point, but there's literally so much material to draw from. So I think you've got a real winner of a concept on your hand, and I can't wait to listen along to the series as it unfolds.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to thank all the listeners for all the positive feedback I've been getting on social media about, you know, the two episodes we've had so far. And please continue listening. And on behalf of Daniel Makabe, I want to thank all the listeners. And until next time, I will say goodbye.